Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and welcome to tonight's show. This is your host, Janice Tunnell, for July 8th, and both my sister Denise and I are very excited about tonight's guest. But first, just want to remind you that the call-in number, if you have a comment or if you have a question, is 914-803-4399. Again, it's 914-803-4399, and you have to push the option to speak with the host, and that's how I know you want to speak. I believe my sister has some beauty news, so I'll just give her a chance to share that.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to my all IMAX-related beauty news. tonight, I just wanted to remind everyone, if you're planning to attend IMAX LA next year, 2013, the show has been moved to January. They're switching their London show and their LA show. So the London show will now be June 21st and 23rd, and the IMAX LA show will now be January 18th through the 20th at the Pasadena Convention Center. So again, if you're planning to attend IMAX LA next year, it will be January 18th through the 20th. The 20th will be the pro-only hours from 2 to 6 p.m., all happening at the Pasadena Convention Center. And for more information on the IMAX shows, www.imax.net. IMAX Vancouver will be held July 21st and 22nd. And again, for more information on that, you can just go to the imax.net website and you'll get all the information on all of the IMAX shows for the remainder of this year and for some coming up early next year. Also, for those of you who are not familiar with the Makeup Artist Pro Card, please go out to that website as well and apply for the Pro Card. You have the Pro Card and you have the Pro Gold Card. The Pro Gold Card are for professional makeup artists who are members of a union like Local 798 or Local 706, as well as if you're represented by an agency. But you can apply for the regular Makeup Artist Pro Card if you're not with an agency or with one of the unions. And that will entitle you to certain discounts at IMAX, discounts on subscriptions to Makeup Artist Magazine. The Pro Gold Card will entitle you to free entry into all of the IMAX. So it's well worth having the card. So please go and check that out as well. And last but not least, don't forget the IMAX new mobile app. So if you download that app, if you have an iPhone or Android phone, and you can get all the latest information on any of the IMAX shows.
And just want to just say one thing. The Pro Card is free.
Yes,
it's free to apply. And I had a question. You said IMAX in January 18th through the 20th, and the 20th is the pro-only day?
No, the 18th is the pro-only day. January 18th. Yeah, the first day from 2 to 6 p.m., like pretty much like it was this year in June.
Okay.
Yeah, the very first day, pro-only day, and then general public welcome to come the 19th and 20th.
Okay, sounds good. Well, we're excited about tonight's show. Again, you can call in 914-803-4399, or you can join us in the chat room. where my sister is kind of holding things down over there. Or, you, again, you can listen online on PC or over the phone. We want to welcome to the show Roshar. Thank you so much, Roshar, for joining us tonight.
Hey, thank you guys so much for having me.
I'm so glad we were able to finally get you on, and I know everyone's excited about tonight's interview. So let's just jump right into it.
Okay.
Tell us a little bit about yourself, and at what age did you decide you wanted to be a makeup artist? What inspired you to do so?
Well, it's something that I would say that I didn't really decide on it. It kind of just happened. First off, my background, I used to draw and paint a lot when I was younger. So I would, you know, I was very, you know, I'm not really a, you know, I'm a little long in the tooth. I'm not really a spring chicken. So my, you know, growing up, you know, in the 80s, you know, I was always trying, looking at the art of, like, say, Nagel, who did, like, I think a lot of people are probably more familiar with his work as far as, like, the Duran Duran Rio CD, Duran Duran Rio cover, you know, that kind of, you know, very graphic. Being, you know, 8 years old and, you know, initially just wanting to draw and paint, that was something I was kind of emulating as a child. And I didn't really think of it as, oh, makeup, but, you know, I kind of was drawing these women with makeup on them. you know? But then also, too, I grew up in a very small town in Texas. I was, again, you know, this is the early 80s, and I was a little punk rock kid, and, you know, small town in Texas, punk rock kid doesn't really mix very well. So I moved away from home at 15, and I lived with girls. And what I would do is I would do their hair and their makeup, and that's really how I paid for my rent. Again, I wasn't thinking, oh, I want to be a makeup artist. It was kind of like a way... really, it was kind of a way of survival. But also, too, you know, I know I was really young, but I was also involved in the underground club scene of the time. So when I would do their hair and their makeup, you know, I wasn't really thinking of, you know, oh, let me just make them really pretty so they can walk, you know, walk around. You know, I mean, I was actually turning them into, you know, like the girl with the Coke bottle glasses and the mullet hairstyle and the applique sweater that, you know, everybody would make fun of at the club, you know, ended up turning into like the Jean Harlow, you know, sex kitten, you know, or, you know, some kind of deity or something. So in other words, you know, I wasn't really, you know, I was putting like six pairs of eyelashes and blue lips and, you know, so they would walk to 7-Eleven to get a pack of cigarettes. So really, I guess I could say that I kind of, it's something that didn't really make a conscious decision on, but it just kind of followed me. And, you know, I came to a point where I was like, you know what, it seems like this has kind of always been in the stars, you know, let me just go ahead and follow with it. And it's led me to where I am today.
Now, let me ask you, when you left at 15, where did you go?
Well, originally, what I did was I went to Austin. Austin was the closest to where I was, you know, from that small town. And I lived there for several years. And then finally at 21, I just kind of up and left to New York.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Gotcha. What was it like at 21? What was it like at 21, moving to New York? And at this point, you knew you wanted to do makeup.
Actually, no. I still remained in the underground club scene. And when I originally moved to New York, I was thinking strictly on going that route. At that point, I still hadn't even thought about makeup. You know, I wanted to go to these, you know, you know, Limelight and Club USA and all these clubs, which I'd actually been coming back and forth from Texas and going to.
Gotcha.
But that's what, you know, I really wanted to continue to have myself submerged in the subculture. And
mm-hmm.
That's what brought me out to New York. Now, however, this was now this is approaching the mid-90s. And at that time, I don't know if you guys are familiar with the movie Party Monster.
Yeah.
Okay, well, anyway, for the listeners out there, Party Monster, that aren't familiar with it, it's basically a movie that is about, it's a pretty accurate representation of what was going on at the time. And all of these clubs started to kind of shut down. There was a lot of, there was a murder involved. There was tax evasions involved, you know, all these different things. So when this started happening, you know, I remember sitting on the pier and like, oh my God, you know, I can't do this anymore. Everything's shutting down. You know, what should I do? Otherwise, I've just moved to another big city. And
mm-hmm.
at that point, I thought, you know, well, I'm good with makeup. I'm good with hair. Hair, I've got to go to school for. Makeup, I don't. Okay, I guess I'll do makeup. I mean, I really wish that I could say, like, some kind of, like, makeup fairy just came out down out of the heavens and waved her wand at me and said this is what it's going to be. But, you know, it was just a really natural progression.
Mm-hmm. And once you started, you know, in your career as a makeup artist, what was it like? I mean, okay, you said, okay, I'm good at makeup. I don't have to go to school for it. Okay, then what? Where did you go from there?
Well, what I did was, is I hadn't really, it hadn't really hit me the fact of being a freelance makeup artist at that point yet.
Mm-hmm.
I knew that, you know, okay, I should do makeup. But at that time, you know, 21, still pretty young. And, you know, this was also a different time period. This was in the mid-90s. So at this point, you know, it wasn't such a well-known profession, I guess, for a lot of people as it
mm-hmm.
is now. And
right.
So I thought, okay, well, I'll start working at a cosmetic company. So I eventually did get hired for a particular cosmetic company. And even at that point, doing that for so many years, I was thinking, okay, well, maybe I can just go into a training position or being a senior artist. It still hadn't hit me about that there's this whole other world of being a freelance artist.
Mm-hmm.
So I continued with that for a number of years. And after 9/11, I was in New York, especially during that time. And when 9/11 happened, I thought, screw this. I am so out of here. I'm going to up and pack my bags and move somewhere else. And there was a position that was opening with that company. They were opening up a counter in Hawaii. So I thought, okay, I've never been to Hawaii. I'll just go. It was actually Maui. And uprooted everything, still continuing to work with that company, but it transferred to Maui. And then things started happening where I was getting booked for things outside of the counter, and it started to become a little bit of a conflict of interest
mm-hmm.
because, you know, I you can only call out sick so many times.
Right.
And, and I was seeing that, you know, I was actually making so much more money and so much more happier at what I was doing outside of the counter.
Mm-hmm.
And it started, that's the point when I started realizing, you know what, there's a whole other world out there that I think I can be better, I can better utilize not only my skills, but my knowledge. And I was so bad. I I went on vacation. Well, actually, I told them I was going on vacation, but I ended up kind of moving without anybody knowing. I'm really bad like that. I'm a typical Capricorn. I'm really bad with dealing with goodbyes and stuff. So even when I left Texas to move to New York, I told everybody, oh, I'm going on vacation. And then, yeah. So anyway, so I told everybody I was going on vacation, and I packed everything, and I did the most logical thing I could possibly do as far as going on with my my freelancing career, and that was moving to Singapore.
Wow.
Okay, that logical aspect is actually kind of a joke, because it was like,
yeah.
Why would, of all places, would you move to Singapore?
Right.
But I thought, too, you know, I was doing research, and I figured, you know, Singapore has its own, it has its own Vogue, it has all its own magazines. It's a small country island. I'd actually, you know, done some other stuff at that by that point outside of the country. And I thought, you know, why don't I just try that? Just quit, base myself there. And, yeah, so I ended up moving off to Singapore for a year.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Well, I mean, also, oh, I'm sorry. Were you going to say something?
No,
Oh.
We're listening.
Okay. Well, I mean, also, too, I moved there without really knowing anybody. So I don't know. Maybe it's youth. Maybe it's just, you know, I just kind of up and do things that are sometimes against my nature. And but it ended up being one of the best things that I had done. I was very lucky. I ended up running into photographers and all these other people that were there that were willing to help me and saw that, you know, I was really trying, you know. I mean, my gosh, you know, this kid that just like upped and moved off to Singapore. I mean, it's like you kind of want to help them out because it's just so silly, you know? But yeah, it was interesting.
How did you do it though? When you moved to Singapore, did you know someone there? I mean, how did you you know, get set up and get started and get going? Because you know, some makeup artists are gonna believe, oh, it's that easy. I'm gonna jump up and move out of the country, and they're gonna be broke then.
Yeah, you know. Well, the thing is too is that what I've learned too, especially with getting older now, is that one of the things that is so nice about youth is that you're not really so hung up on consequence. And I wasn't afraid of consequence. I figured, you know what, I'll just do it, you know. And I'm not thinking about, okay, repercussions, or what if I fail, or... You know, I didn't give myself that option. On top of that, too, I also, you know, I'm not very tied down. You know, I wasn't very tied down. I didn't have, you know, my family was in Texas. You know, I was already pretty, I mean, just like I said, from basically being on my own from 15 on, you know, I was, you know, I've got a little bit of an independent streak, I would say. So that helped. But I would say the main thing is not being so stuck on consequence and just trying it, you know. And I would tell, you know, newer people that are, you know, in, you know, these markets where, say, they want to do this, but the market is so small and it really is not feasible for the type of work they want to do, to just, you know, take that chance. If it doesn't work out, you can always go back. But it's always just giving that chance.
Right.
I talked a lot, don't I?
And it's quite all right. That's what we want. One of my best. Not afraid to talk. I mean, there's a lot in just what you said. I mean, when you were in New York and then when you moved to Singapore, what were some of the differences? And I mean, and I know you're based out of New York and Los Angeles now. What are some of the differences from the places that you've lived and places that you've traveled to, some of the differences in makeup styles?
In makeup style, well, you know, that was one thing, too. When I up and left from Hawaii to Singapore, it was a wake-up call because I had been working on my portfolio in Hawaii. And, you know, even though I was, you know, I was pretty decent with my makeup, the fact of the matter was is that I was going into a large market with a small market book. So here I am, you know, getting scheduled with these meetings with editors and stuff, and they're flipping through my book, and they're just like, okay, well, what about this? What's up with this model? What's up with this photography? You know, it's like they couldn't really get past those aspects. And, you know, I was sitting there going, you know, again, being green, saying, no, but look at the makeup. That's what this is about. But, you know, they couldn't get past it. So I did learn very quickly in Singapore, or just in generally in a larger market, that when you go with a smaller market book, say, it doesn't pass. It doesn't translate. So it was actually a really good thing as far as learning, as far as professionalism, and as far as, you know, that aspect of having your book together when you move from one market to another. You know, I learned at that point, you know, that I really need to gear my book for whatever market that I want to be in. Like, for instance, if you have an artist that's in, say, Los Angeles, but they want to work in New York, you know, you have to gear your book towards a New York market.
Right.
And meaning, like, the photography, the models, everything, because, you know, even the differences between New York and L.A., the models are even different. Los Angeles, they're a little bit more commercial because that's the type of market that's here. The photography is a little bit more commercial because, again, that's the type of market that's here. Obviously, I'm actually in Los Angeles right now, so that's why I keep staying here. Sometimes I have to kind of stop and think about where I actually am. I have been doing a lot of travel lately. But, going back to, like, makeup styles, though, when I was in Singapore, one thing that I really noticed is that in the Asian markets, it's much more minimal with the makeup. It's very eyebrows were a big thing because my eyebrows were a little bit stronger. You know, I was coming from a cosmetic counter, and that's where my skills kind of were. And I very quickly learned that everything that I'd learned at that counter, at a makeup counter, I had to unlearn because it didn't translate well into the fashion world. So I had to go softer with my brow. I couldn't, you know, I had to spend my time on other aspects of the face and other aspects of makeup and not spend so much time on the other things, if that makes any sense.
Right.
But also, too, you know, I travel a lot and I work almost everywhere. And, you know, I do notice that there is a difference between, you know, a lot of other markets. Like in the Philippines, you know, I noticed that they really love a smoky eye and a red lip together. Ooh. And that's the natural lip. No, I'm joking. That's I saw it a lot. So going in with a different perspective for a lot of for that market ended up being deemed as a little bit more refreshing. In Russia, they do really strong brows. You know, that's kind of like that's what I noticed. Russian Ukraine, very strong, angular brow, overdrawn lip, you know. So if you can kind of tailor, what I always tell people in those markets when they're working on their book, if they can kind of tailor their skills and their book to more of an international market, you know, it opens you up to be able to work everywhere. You're not just stuck at being local. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
I'm sorry, I've had 3 cups of coffee, so I'm just...
No, that makes plenty of sense.
And again, coming from a very small town in Texas, remember I said, you know, being growing up in the South, we have a way of talking where if it's one question, you know, we kind of like give 6 different stories or examples, and then we get to the final answer of the question. It's a real pain in the butt for people that are like trying to translate for me into a different language because they're like, okay, what do I do here?
No, but it's fine because we're getting a lot, I mean, the listeners are getting a lot of great information out of this. I mean, I just think it's important for them to hear this, though, because, you know, there are so many people who are from smaller towns, or even if it's a larger town, but there's just nothing there for them, and they want to move off, you know, somewhere. And particularly most people, like, want to go to New York or L.A. and places like that, you know, but it's good for them to know that. You know,
well, you know what I usually like to tell those people, too, that are in those smaller markets that do want to go out, you know, I don't want them to sit here and hear this and think, oh, well, darn, I'm in this town, and that means that, you know, I'm not going to be able to do it unless I'm actually there. You know, don't feel that way, because all they have to do, this is usually what I like to suggest, is take a working vacation, save up, go to the market that you want to work in, go there, spend a week there, 2 weeks, whatever time actually allows for you, and focus on working on your book in that location. Because not only are you going to get what is appropriate for your book, you're also going to learn the philosophy and the dynamics between that location. Because, you know, New York and L.A. are very different from each other. The culture is different. So, you know, somebody that is from Tennessee that has never been to L.A. may come out here and be like, oh, wow, 2 hours in traffic a day? You know, it's 15 miles to get from one point to the other? Or they may go to, you know, New York during the summertime and go, oh, wow, it's hotter than an Easy Bake Oven. They're things that they'll actually learn about that particular market that they may not have known before. And, you know, we all kind of glamorize places that we've never been to, and then we go and we're like, that's it? This is, this isn't what I thought it was.
Absolutely. That's so true. Now, let me ask you, because you do beauty, you do editorial, you do fantasy work. How are they all different from each other in your eyes?
There are a lot of differences in the sense that, I mean, beauty and editorial can kind of go in hand. Fantasy and editorial can go in hand. Editorial just basically means that you're doing something for a magazine. So going between, like, beauty and fantasy, the difference between the two is that you kind of, fantasy, I always tell people, like, you don't look at it with limitations. You know, you can block out the brows. You can do all of these different things that actually create a whole other canvas. And also, too, you're working with a very different part of your mind. You know, placement, you know, it's just all about... It's really working with a different part of your mind. You're not really looking at what is in front of you. You're creating something that you're not looking at what it is in front of you. You're looking at the final image. So you're thinking 10 steps ahead. And that's how you're able to kind of create something that would actually work, is because you're working almost backwards. A lot of newer artists, what they'll do is they think, okay, I do this, and then I get to this step, and then I get to this step, and they kind of just go about it in this very linear process. And the thing is, what I find personally with fantasy work is that you work backwards. You envision the final image, and then you figure out how you're going to get there instead of kind of doing it right at that point. Does that make any sense? Okay.
Right. Yeah. And, no, it does.
whereas beauty work, you're looking at your subject. You're looking at the skin tone. You're looking at the cheekbones. You're looking at the lips, the eyes. You know, you're looking at all these things that are of the particular subject that are harmonious and pleasing and, you know, and more working with those. So you're working more with what you've got in front of you. Like if you're doing a beauty shoot on a model, you want to do something on them that is going to look appropriate. You know,
right.
Whereas with fantasy work, you can change it. You know, if she's got big bushy brows, you can block them out. You can get rid of them. You know, with beauty work, sometimes that big bushy brow looks really gorgeous with that particular eye. So it is a different way of switching modes into thinking. And personally, you know, I love doing both. You know, a lot of people mm-hmm. ask me, like, which do I prefer? And you know, sometimes I get asked to do fantasy work so much that, you know, sometimes I love doing like a natural glow on the skin and then that's it, and vice versa.
Right.
Now, all of your fantasy work is amazing. Like,
oh, thank you.
Because, you know, you're talking
I should
about,
hire you to be my publicist.
I do. You speak about with your fantasy, you're speaking about, you know, having to think 10 steps ahead and having to think about the finished, you know, product. What are you
mm-hmm.
thinking about when you approach that job? What are you, or even if you're just coming off of the top of your head, just wanting to do something, what are you thinking about when you're thinking about the end, the finished product? Like, I'm looking at some of this stuff, like, where did that come from?
You know, I don't know. I think part of it, I think, could stem from my experiences in the underground club scene.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure there's an influence to that. That's one thing, too, that I, just kind of a little bit of a segue real fast. That's one thing that I always, I figured out is what kind of defines a person's overall style when it comes to doing makeup or doing something creative, that their personal experiences, like, for instance, like your best friend when you were 8 years old, the street that you lived on when you were 12, and your favorite song when you were 15, all of those things dictate how you draw a line. They all basically, they're just elements that make you who you are, and that make your style so much different from the next person. That's why sometimes, too, you know, if people will try to directly emulate, nice word for copying, somebody else's work, and it's just not the same thing because, of course, that person has had totally different experiences, and that's what kind of has geared up their style. How I figured that out, too, is that one time I had to do, I keyed this show for this Japanese designer, H. Naoto, and they wanted something, you know, they wanted something kind of gothic, but I didn't want to do anything that would be too typical. So
right.
The look that I created was I blocked out the brow, you know, it was a kind of a rust underneath the eye, kind of fading down. And then I created these Swarovski crystal branches that went over the face. So then that way, being a runway show and with the spotlights on, it would just look this beautiful, glimmering, you know, cracks or branches that went across the face. So it was quite effective. However, I had to demo it 6 months later for IMATS because one of the things that I was doing was runway technique. And I thought, you know, this might be kind of fun to, you know, demonstrate for, I think it was in Los Angeles. And I'm sitting there and, you know, I put on the music. I'm actually listening to like Nine Inch Nails, you know, something really kind of aggressive and just kind of, you know, just get me into that mindset about what I was 6 months prior with doing this look. And cutting and creating these particular branch-like things, for some strange reason, I couldn't get the shape down. I mean, this beautiful Swarovski branch was looking like a fish. Like, I couldn't get it. And then I realized at that point, I was like, wait a second. My experiences within that 6 months have changed me enough to where now it's changed the shape. So I realize, I guess it's kind of like when people go in to do something creative and then they try to redo the creative another time, like a couple of months later, and it's never quite the same. It's because those experiences have changed you to the point to where you're different. And it comes out in your work. I know it's very zen, but it's, I don't know, it's just something that I kind of learned, and I forgot what the point was to the question I was trying to answer. I guess, huh?
No, I was just asking, you know, like, where did some of your inspiration, I guess, come from for some of your fantasy work?
With the fantasy work.
I think you answered it.
even with the inspiration on the, like, even with my beauty work, you know, one of the things I would say that would inspire me with that is actually light. And it's the way the lighting hits the particular subject when they first walk into the room. That's a major inspiration for me, too, because all of a sudden it's like I see the contours of the face, the cheekbone, you know, that immediately inspires me. If I'm doing something like a beauty that, you know, could be, and when I say beauty, I'm not talking about putting, you know, like a clear lip gloss and mascara, you know, of course I'm talking about doing something a little bit more Richard.
Right.
But not on the fantasy aspect where, you know, they're, you know, they've got bald, you know, they're bald with a blonde wig and they've got metal shards coming out of their eyes.
Now I wanted to ask you about with your fantasy, is it all hand painted or are you airbrushing some?
You know, I've got a beautiful airbrush machine that a photographer got me as a gift, and it's shiny and silver, and it sits in my closet. I have never whipped it out. I don't know. I think what it is for me, I find it easier, me personally. Everybody is different. But I find for me personally, it's a little bit easier for me to do it either more so by hand. Of course, airbrush, you know, airbrush does have its benefits, and I'm sure, like, for a full body issue, it would really help me out a lot. But I don't know, I guess I could, in that term, I kind of have a little bit of a old school way of approaching things.
Mm-hmm. Now, from our chat room, Keisha is asking, how do I find the trends and looks of the international beauty market?
The international beauty market. I would say, well, one, going through the magazines, like Googling different types of magazines. One thing, internationally, a lot of things that are going on in New York are viewed more international. It translates more internationally. So you could look through, you know, Google is such a good friend. You know, you could go through different magazines and, you know, Italian Vogue, French Vogue, all of these things, and that will actually help give a little bit more of a direction. One thing that I find, though, too, that is really a plus point with the with the international markets is it's working a little bit more with minimalism, you know. And we all hear that saying: you pick a focus. You either focus on the eye, or you focus on the lip, or in a rare occasion, you focus on both. But, and you'll kind of see that in a lot of these magazines. And what I also too advise is don't, when you go through these magazines or these images, don't only look at the images that you like. Look at everything. Because a lot of people, what they'll do is they'll do that and they only look at the images they like and they start to miss out on what's going on. Another thing too is they could do is they could look at what's going on in, you know, Milan Fashion Week, Paris Fashion Week. You know, they can see those elements.
Right.
Talk a little bit about... Oh, I'm sorry.
Say it again?
Sorry. You're referring to, like, online, being able to see this stuff online.
Yeah, because luckily, I mean, that's especially too with a lot of people that are in smaller markets, they may not have, you know, the access to, you know, these magazines and so forth. And, I mean, online is a much cheaper
right.
way to the look.
Right. And most of the, you know, a lot of magazines are online now too, so.
Exactly.
Definitely an easy way to get that information.
Exactly. And that's the thing, too, with being a makeup artist, you know, you really have to, you know, when you're, you know, starting off or, you know, you really research is so important because I run into a lot of instances where I'll run into somebody and they won't be able to tell the difference between the 50s and the 60s. You know, or
mm-hmm.
the 20, you know, different time periods, or
mm-hmm.
or even movies and so forth. And the thing is, too, is that being an artist, you really have to know your references, because if you do get a job and they say, we're shooting it like, you know, like Blade Runner, and we want this type of makeup, and if you're sitting there and you're like, well, I don't know what Blade Runner is, you know, you have to, you know, Google it. So knowing references and, you know, different movies and so forth that are actually key parts in our culture and even in makeup artist culture are really important.
And that's true. I can't stress that enough, that you have to know your references, because you really don't know what you're going to be asked to do. You know, they
yeah.
may give you a heads up about what the shoot is about, but, you know, you get there and they want something totally different. So that is
yeah.
so important to know your references. And I understand that, you know, most of us, you know, weren't born in the 50s, you know, or
yeah.
the 40s, but, you know, but we still, you know, have to know those time periods.
Yeah.
We have to.
Well, I also find that to be kind of an interesting aspect, too, about a lot of people that are younger at right now. I mean, I'm a lot of models, for instance, that I've worked with. I mean, oh, my gosh. I mean, they're born in, like, 95, you know, and
mm-hmm.
I'll make a reference to, okay, I'll bring it up again, Blade Runner. And the first thing they say is, oh, I don't know, I wasn't born then. I'm like, girl, I wasn't born in the 60s, and I know who Chubby Checker is, you know. But then I started thinking about it, and I was like, I realized that what is going – and I hear that so frequently. And I think that what I realized is that once these people, you know, being born in that time period, they're basically born in the age of the Internet. So
mm-hmm.
me growing up, like in, you know, in the 70s and 80s, you know, if I wanted to see, you know, my favorite song or my favorite video on MTV, which they actually played music at that time, I had to sit through six songs that I actually hated to actually see my video. But the thing is I was exposed still to those things that I wouldn't have normally been because I had to sit through it. Whereas now, people can, you know, they've got the internet, so they basically search things that they already know, and they're not indirectly exposed to things that they wouldn't have been. So it's kind of an interesting dynamic. I mean, yeah, we've got the internet to do research with. At the same time, you know, it's the thing about being exposed to outside things that we wouldn't have normally been.
Right.
Keisha's also asking, is it also good to look at artwork of different time periods?
Oh, yes, definitely. A lot of artists can be, you know, can find a lot of inspiration in that. Definitely. Everything from Picasso to Matisse to Erte, you know, different, you know, there's so many artists that do have so much that do draw off a lot of inspiration from these artists that it would be a shame not to research that as well, because, you know, just looking at the color combinations or even the technique could be something that could really inspire a very interesting look.
Do you think when makeup artists study other artists' work all the time, do you think that kind of hurt them? Not hurt, but, you know, kind of hinders them in some way of moving forward on a path that's just their own? Do you think they sometimes tend to kind of create a style that's exactly like someone else's versus, okay, I study your work, I take a little of what you do, I take a little of someone else and kind of come up with my own thing. Do you think it kind of hurts them sometimes?
I do. I can understand, like, in the beginning of their career or in the beginning of wanting to be a makeup artist and just looking at how certain things work and dynamics between it. I could understand that aspect, but one thing is, like, once you get into being a working artist, it's like, for instance, with me, I don't look at fashion magazines. I mean, I only pick one up if I know that I've got something in there, but I don't really look at other people's work. And what that does is it prevents any kind of idea from being burned, even in my subconscious, to where I'm not subconsciously recreating something that's already been there. So I think that after a while, once the artist becomes a little more confident in their own skills, that they should probably not. I mean, that definitely works for me. It's just not really looking at other people's work.
Well, I agree with that. What inspires you?
What inspires me? Chicken tetrazzini. No, sorry. I would say light actually inspires me. I know it sounds really hokey, but I've always kind of been that way. I was always so fascinated with the fact that a rose could be red in direct sunlight, but it can look magenta in a sunset. So the fact of the way light manipulates things and it can manipulate shape, that's one thing that really inspires me. Yeah, I don't have the typical answer of like, oh, well, it's music or it's, you know, anything like that. It's really the way the light interprets things. That's what actually, I don't know, I'm really weird like that. when I was 8 years old, and I know I keep bringing up Blade Runner, so all you people listening, okay, that's your homework. You've got to go rent Blade Runner. It's one of my all-time favorite movies. But being 8 years old and watching that movie, I was so captivated that the entire movie was backlit. There was no CGI in the movie, and there's these scenes where the eyes are glowing red because they're basically androids, and how they created that, since they didn't have CGI, is they shot through a two-way mirror. They put a two-way mirror in front of the camera, so it reflected the light into their eyes that gave that glow. You know, like when you see an animal on the side of the road at night and the lights kind of reflect into their eye. It created that. So being that young and being so inspired and enthralled with the fact that, you know, you can do so much with light, I think is one aspect that is the way my mind is wired and what inspires me and does influence me.
Nice. Can you tell us a little bit about your work with Yabby?
Well, Yabby is a Canadian company that makes great palettes. They're really pigmented, the eyeshadows, lipsticks. They've really actually helped me a lot in a bind, because I'm one of those people that when I show up on a shoot, people kind of laugh at the fact that I just basically have a messenger bag. I don't have 3 huge suitcases. You know, I like to travel light, and I think that has a lot to do with my influence of being in New York, because, you know, you're having to trek around subways and you're on foot. You don't have the luxury of a car all the time. So these palettes really come in handy, because you've got all your eyeshadows with you, but they're so small, you know, and but they're still pigmented at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one thing that I really have liked about them. And that's why when they asked me to represent for them for IMATS and to do demos and stuff for them, I was more than happy to oblige. Because I use their product. I believe in it. And I've been very lucky to be connected with them and to be able to sign that particular product.
Is there one particular product that you like from them that you always tell people you need to go out and get?
It's the eyeshadow palettes.
Okay.
There's a neutral palette that, oh God, there are different palettes that are all great, but the one that I kind of find myself to use a lot is the neutral palette. So that's, or even two, a lot of artists might enjoy the palette called the Best of Both Worlds. It has half of the neutral palette, and it has another half of, like, the stronger, brighter colors.
Okay.
Oh, darn, and the pearl paints are really good, too. Okay, I'm sorry, I can't list one.
Now, let me ask you, I've never tried any of their foundations. Have you tried their foundation? And if so, what do you like or don't like about them?
I have tried the foundations. I do like the cream foundations. I mean, they're both silicone-based, especially the liquid, which is good because it helps keep it from breaking down. And it's also really good if you're in warmer climates and if you're dealing with oily skin. I do find myself going back a lot to the creams, because the creams give medium to full coverage, but you can also sheer them out, like if you use your beauty blender with it. And I'm one of those people that when I'm going into something, I want to use something that has a pretty good amount of coverage, because then I have the option if I want to sheer it out. And that keeps me also, too, from bringing 20 different kinds of foundations with me.
Gotcha.
Right.
Gotcha. Let's remember to try that.
Yeah, definitely try the creams. Yeah.
Now, I remember you were doing an art of contouring presentation for Makeup Forever.
Can you repeat that?
You did an art of contouring presentation for Makeup Forever?
Yes.
What are some key points you think every makeup artist should know about contouring?
Well, you know, one thing, contouring is a big thing with me. Just about every image that you see, I've actually contoured them. And one of the reasons why I do it is I'm not trying to change the shape of the face. I'm actually trying to recreate the depth that gets taken out from the flash. Because 35% of whatever you do in photography gets washed out from the flash. So I do the contouring to actually bring that depth back. And one of the things that makes it look natural, I mean, you look at the images, and a lot of them don't really look contoured. I mean, maybe now that I've mentioned it, you know, people kind of look at it and go, oh, okay.
Right.
But what helps is the color choice. Because if you look at a photograph, and if you look at the color of what the shadows are around the face, that should be a guide on what kind of color to pick to use as contour. And usually you'll find it to be, for lighter skin tones, you usually find it to be kind of a cool brown. For deeper skin tones, kind of like a warm brown. And I noticed, too, that an interesting byproduct, because originally I was going in at it to bring back that depth, but the interesting byproduct is that it started to make, when I would do that contouring and create the depth, it almost made the skin look like it's glowing. And a good example of that, if you look at, I hate bringing up other people, but for instance, you know, everybody gets so enthralled with Jennifer Lopez's makeup. And when you see her, even in person or on the red carpet, she is contoured to high heaven. But the thing is you can't tell it because it's blended and because of the color choice. But that contouring is one of the aspects, at least, that makes her skin look so glowy and dimensional. And that's why I found it to be a very interesting byproduct of, you know, creating not just depth, but it made the skin look like it was glowing. So definitely as far as color choice, you know, I would say as a guide, looking at a photograph. Also, too, just to know where to contour, all you have to do is look at the person in front of you. Look at the way the light is hitting them. And it's like you actually see the planes of the face. Nobody's face is, you know, a flat piece of paper. So you'll definitely see some kind of depth, something to, you know, where to put it as far as your placement goes. It's one of those things where, going back to that thing about me saying that light is such an inspiration and segueing into, like, how I had to unlearn a lot of what I'd learned at the counter. Once I started looking at the way light affects the planes of the face, it gave me more of a guide on how to do my beauty makeup, or just makeup in general, because my placement was thinking about where the light is and how I want to freeze that person, the way the person looks in front of me right there at that moment, to where she still looks dimensional, or the subject still looks dimensional after that flash has gone off.
Right. Those are some good pointers. I'm going to take a phone call. Hold on, let's see if they're still there. Let's see.
Did you say you're going to take a crank call?
No, a phone call.
Okay. I can
Hello?
Take great calls, too.
Hello?
Hello?
Hi, this is Kim Carruthers from St. Louis, Missouri, makeup artist from St. Louis.
Nice to meet you.
How are you?
Good, thank you.
Good. I have a question, and I didn't catch it. It's just a quick question. You were talking about a particular brand of cosmetics. You were talking about the palettes and the foundations and the eyeshadows and stuff. I think this was the one you were saying that I guess it's a little bit more compact where you don't have to travel. So, you know, it enables you to travel very lightly. And I didn't catch the name of that brand of cosmetics.
Sure, sure. It's actually called Yabby. Y-A-B-U-Y.
Yabby?
Yabby. Y-A-B-U-Y.
Y-A-B-U-Y. Okay, got it. Okay.
And they're really good, too. They have they sell it in mats, and they do sell at the makeup show, but they also do sell online. And they've got a pretty quick, efficient customer service. So everybody that I've heard that has actually had to order from them online has been pleased. So that's good to know. Especially
you
said you're out in Missouri, yes?
Right, I'm in St. Louis.
Ah, cool.
Yeah. So that Yabby, are you saying that, I mean, because I know you said something about with all your skin or whatever, but I mean, can other skin types use it as well or?
Yeah, they actually, especially with the foundations, they've got a pretty extensive line. They do have a pink-based palette, and they have a yellow-based palette. I personally find myself using more of the yellow-based because the only time I find that anybody's really that pink is going to be either if they're sunburned or if they're Welsh.
Okay.
Right.
Okay.
Plus, to the yellow, going a little bit on the yellower side, too, is like if they've got any kind of redness in the skin, it does help counteract that. Now, however, when you do go with darker skin tones, it always depends on, what they actually look like. You do have a darker olive, and then you do have a darker, warmer tone. You do have to go continuing to keep that more warmer because you don't want to go too ashy. If it's too yellow, it'll read ashy on the darker skin tone.
Gotcha. Okay. Yeah, I'm actually on their website right now as we speak, so I can kind of, I see that it looks like they have a pretty wide selection,
Yeah. But to make things a little bit easier, too, and I know that everybody's computer monitors can read color a little differently. They have already pre-arranged palettes, and I would definitely say that if you're wanting to start off with getting to know them and how they work, to probably go with the Best of Both Worlds palette, because you'll get your neutrals, but at the same time, you also get the fun stuff. Oh, and another thing, too, that's good about them is that you can wet your brush and use it on the eyeshadow, and it also intensifies the color, and it doesn't ruin the eyeshadow.
Okay, so something similar to kind of like the bake eyeshadows, then, right?
Basically, yeah. Wetting it can really make it much more intense.
Right,
they also have a product. They also have a product too called the Pearl Paints, and the Pearl Paints are almost like cream shadows.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes what I'll do is I'll use a cream shadow, one of the Pearl Paints, and then I'll layer a eyeshadow on top of it. And that, again, also, too, bumps up the intensity. I like to do that a lot, too, because, say, for instance, you do, like, this yellow color, and it looks so beautiful in person, and as soon as that flash goes off and you look at the final product and it's like, where did it go?
Right.
It's like, where did it actually go? finding that if you layer the same color cream underneath it and then patting the eyeshadow on top of it, I find that you get that intensity that doesn't dissipate with the flash.
Gotcha. Okay, good. Well, then I appreciate it. I'm going to check it out further and They'll probably be getting some of my money.
Well, great. It'll be well worth it.
Thank you.
Nice talking to you.
You too. Thank you.
All right. Are there any more questions out there from the chat room or for the phone lines? If you're calling from the phone lines, please make sure you push the option to speak with the host. Are there any more questions in the chat room?
I don't see any right now.
I think I kind of answered everything in one breath.
Right. I know. I was just we have gone over time, so I was just going to see if there were any more last-minute questions out there. Let me see if I got everything that I wanted answered. Are there any other makeup artists out there that you're that inspire you? I know at IMAX, it seems like everybody was in Kabuki's sitting in on Kabuki's class. Are there any makeup artists that you really just love to see their work, or inspired by their work?
I don't really look at a lot of other people's work, but people mm-hmm. that inspire me are people can be who they are, and they'll inspire me in much different ways. Like,
mm-hmm.
for instance, there's certain, like, artists that are just so humble and nice, and they're talented in their craft, but it's them as an individual isn't about their craft. They are inspirational to me, just to be a better person. You know, I know it may not really be the answer that a lot of people kind of look at, but, like I said, I don't really look at a lot of people's work unless they ask me to, either it's for a critique or something. But,
mm-hmm.
yeah, so when it comes to being inspired by other people, I'm more inspired by just their general nature. Yeah, just being humble and just being kind, and that's something that is—it's really coveted and prized and priceless in this industry.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Do you know anything about Yabby being sold at Target?
Can you repeat that?
I said, do you know anything about Yabby being sold at Target?
Oh, no, I can tell you no. Yeah, that wouldn't be there.
I didn't so.
Maybe what happened?
I didn't think so. Maybe they're mistaken it with another brand or something.
Yeah, it has to be another brand. I know that Yabby is, yeah, they don't sell in Target. I mean, it would probably be great if they did, because then that way people have more access to them. But at this, I guess it's safe to say at this moment, no.
No, yeah.
Right. Well, speaking of Target, there are a lot of brands. I know there's Elf at Target, and I know some makeup artists out there tell me that, they love Elf Cosmetics, they just love everything about it. What do you think? Because I hear some artists say that you, as a professional makeup artist, you should use professional products. And they're not considering professional products that you buy or purchase at Target. What do you think about that?
Are you saying specifically Target or just like outside professional stores in general?
I'm just saying, just like, at other stores in general, they don't consider that professional cosmetic, products.
Yeah. Well, the thing is what I go on is not necessarily deemed professional or not. It's more about whether or not it's pigmented enough. Because like I was
mm-hmm.
mentioning before, we're dealing with the degradation of the intensity when it comes to a flash or for even with long wear, if it's going to be on an individual for 8 hours. So I find that when it comes to pigmentation, a lot of the stuff that's sold out in department stores and so forth, you know, those are basically for consumers. A lot of them won't have that intensity because they're selling the product to a market that doesn't want a really strong blue eyeshadow, or they may be afraid to do a really strong blue eyeshadow. So instead of going that route, it's, you know, I think in my personal opinion, it's safer to go on a more professional route because it's what makes it professional is it's geared for photography. It's geared for that. It's not just geared for consumers. With that said, I have bought pigments and glitters, actually from that particular company you just mentioned, e.l.f. You know, sometimes I will indulge in those, but when it comes to a foundation or an eyeshadow or something that I really need that pigmentation or that coverage, personally, I do have a tendency to steer away from things that are geared solely for consumers.
Mm-hmm.
But there are mascaras that, you know, I love to get, you know, drugstore mascaras. You know, Voluminous by L'Oreal is one of my go-tos.
Right.
I mean, that's just, especially the carbon black. That's one thing that I always end up going towards. We really have to, like, dump them anyway, like, every 3 months. You know, for hygienic reasons. So, you know, if you're having to go through a mascara so frequently, you know, and, you know, me, I go through them like water. So I do find that to get me what I'm exactly looking for, that intensity and, you know, having to go through it so frequently at a lower price point, I think the Voluminous by L'Oreal is just such a go-to for me.
Yeah, I agree. I agree, and I agree for the same reasons that you just shared.
Ah. It's true.
It's true. It's very true. It's very true. You know, like you said, that's not to say that there aren't some things that I don't buy, but, some of the stuff is just not pigmented like you need for the work that you have to do. Eyeliners and mascaras and, you know, like you said, some glitters and things like that.
It's fine.
I mean, I saw an ad, I think it was in Allure or somewhere, where e.l.f. has HD powder. And I was saying, I'm almost tempted to go buy some just to see and test how well that works.
It's always great to try things, you know. I'm never going to say don't, but yeah, you could always try it out. I do know that different HD powders you do have to be a little bit careful of, because if you get a little bit too much on your brush, they'll have some flashback, meaning that you'll look like, I'm sure we all remember that picture of Nicole Kidman, where it looked like, you know, she was on the red carpet and it looked like she had a really interesting Friday night of white powder all around her face and her nose, but it was actually, could have been contributed to a flashback issue.
Right.
I'm not going to get in trouble for that, am I? If you're listening, Nicole, I'll still work for you.
Right.
And I won't give you any flashback. Call me.
Oh, God. It's hilarious. That is hilarious. But, okay, I think that sums it up for my questions. I don't see any more people on the phone line. And okay, but since we went over time, I might as well get all the questions in now. But
sure.
We don't
we don't want to hold you any longer if there aren't any more questions. But I really do appreciate you coming on the show. What's next? What are you doing next?
Oh, my gosh. I actually, in 2 weeks, I'm leaving for Japan, which
mm-hmm.
I'll be there for a month and a half. I'm doing a couple of presentations. I'm doing a couple of shows for some Japanese designers and
okay.
Working on some campaigns. And then after that, I don't know where I'm going to be. I think I might have to be back in Los Angeles. And then New York Fashion Week will be coming up.
Wow.
And then, oh my gosh, and then mm-hmm. after that, I've got to be, in 1 month, I'll have to be in Chicago, back to Japan, Manila, and I forgot where else. I just really wish I would hurry up and develop teleportation because there's some long flights. So
right.
I've got some interesting stuff going on, and I'm quite excited about it. So,
well, it all sounds exciting, and I just want to read a couple comments to you that they are saying in the chat room. You know, you were talking about your fantasy work, and someone says, "Look at his fantasy section, thanks." My sister says his fantasy section just shuts my mouth.
It what?
Someone else,
not what?
Your fantasy section just shuts her mouth.
I hope that's a compliment.
Else. Right, it is.
Okay, well, thank you.
Somebody says my jaw is dropping as I'm typing this. Yeah, it's a lot of nice compliments here.
Well, I appreciate that.
Yeah.
So I appreciate that.
We're all big fans here at Beauty Talk of your work, so we appreciate you coming on and just sharing a little bit of your story.
Well, thank you so much. Yeah. Thank you for having me, and thank you for sitting up with my 3 cups of coffee and pacing and talking at the same time.
It's quite all right. You know, I'd rather have somebody come on and talk and answer the questions before I can even ask them than have a page full of questions and can't get them to say one word. So you're fine. Don't worry about it.
Great.
You are
fine.
Well,
that's the thing, too. It's makeup. And, it's not anything. It's makeup. It's an art. It's something that comes from within. And, to be appreciative and to be humble and to enjoy what you do is something that's just, it's something that I thrive to be. And, I really hope that other artists out there know that, to be that way as well, because we all hear horror stories, especially starting off, that, some people can be just a little edgy and hard, and yeah, there's no reason to be. I'm sure everybody can tell by me talking that I'm just kind of, I poop like everyone else.
Right. Well, thank you so much. We've held you up enough. Again, we appreciate you coming on, and
thank you.
Maybe we'll get you back on the show sometime down the road after you're finished traveling the world, then you can come back and share some of your stories with us. We'd love to hear about it.
Lovely. Let me add real fast, too, that the people that are listening, I do have a Facebook fan page. If you just go on to Facebook and type in Roshar, R-O-S-H-A-R, and if you go on and like the fan page, I do workshops, I do presentations, of course, internationally and nationally, and I do post a schedule, so if they're interested in any of that, and also, too, sometimes I'll post behind-the-scenes work, so you can actually see the work without all the hoopla, the photography, And, yeah, it might be something that other people would be interested in. And, again, that's Roshar, R-O-S-H-A-R, on Facebook.
And also, Roshar, feel free to post your workshops on the Beauty Talk Facebook fan page. So that way, those people over there, you know, will find out about it as well, you know, whenever you're
great
posting.
Idea. Okay.
Yeah.
Sounds good.
What's that?
I said you forgot one last question that we always
ask. Yeah, one last question that we always ask our guests, and that is, what is beauty to you?
Beauty to me. To me, beauty, it can be symmetry, it can be harmony, it can also be mystery. For me personally, I seem to find things beautiful is when I'm looking at it and I'm trying, I can't understand it, and I'm trying to, it gets my mind thinking and trying to dissect it and just not look, you know, not looking away. So for beauty, for me, it's not just like, oh yeah, that's cute. It's like I'm actually staring at it. Like, what is it? How is it working? What makes it? Why is it? And why is it making me feel this way? That to me is what is beauty.
Nice. And with that being said, thank you guys for listening to tonight's show. We thank you again, Roshar, for joining us. If you like if you like tonight's show, go out and mark it as a favorite here on Blog Talk Radio. And as always, again, join us next Sunday night at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time right here on Blog Talk Radio. Thank you, guys, and have a great night. Thanks again, Roshar.
Thank you.
All right. Good night.
Good night.
Bye-bye.